listening to Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Got Paranormal. Is a talk show based on the integration of shared ideas coming from multiple perspectives within a round table format. Designed to examine assumptions and to expand awareness. Join S.E. Burns and her co-host as they make sure you have got paranormal.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Tonight's guest is energy shifter Sharon Sinclair. However, her husband, Larry Hitchcock, is sitting in for her, maybe for most of the show, perhaps the entire show, which is just as good. They do that. They work on the same projects together, and we're really looking forward to talking to Larry. Joining me tonight are my two co-hosts, Robert J. Bradbury, and our professor of history, Professor Earl Shandemeyer. Gut Wrench is monitoring the chat room, so if you have any questions, he will do his best to include you as usual. Welcome, Larry Hitchcock.
Well, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Tell us again, Sharon is busy on projects, correct?
Sharon is very busy on projects. It's a funny thing coming out of the holidays, give it to a sense of house cleaning needs or spiritual, you know, house cleaning. Things get busy this time of year.
Yeah, she did tell me. We were communicating the past week, and she was busy all weekend away doing house clearings and
primarily
that.
House clearings. We have a lot of interesting. We work a lot with realtors, and in this market, they found it to be what can I say? A good practice to.
Why are you laughing, Robbie?
Well, I'm imagining that that's a sales tool. This house is freshly cleansed, so buy it.
I don't know, is it?
I think a lot of the realtors don't really advertise the fact. They just have known through experience that we've all done it. We've all walked into a place that just feels pretty screwy. It doesn't feel right, and a lot of people throw up their hands and go, well, what am I going to do about it? And they've called for years. They've called Sharon and our team to come in and work with it and make it feel better. And it works.
Yeah, that's pretty astounding. When you think about a realtor who makes their money by selling properties, that they're willing to invest. Literally, they take that as an investment toward their ability to sell that house.
Yes, it does. But it works both ways. I mean, I think with realtors that we have a relationship with over time, we feel the same way in that we actually will do the house clearing and get paid when the sale comes through on their commission.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, we are going to elaborate on the realtors later, okay? But first, I want to hopefully you can explain to the listeners what exactly an energy shifter is or does. Can you do that?
Sure. I'd be happy to. I mean, Sharon's motto, and it's on the website, is shift the energy, change your life. And Sharon's background comes from a Native American father and a mother and grandmother who were pretty steeped in Celtic traditions. Her father also was an Air Force pilot. They moved all the time. But when the family moved, and it was a large family, six kids, they cleared the houses that they were moving into and that they were moving out of. So Sharon got introduced to this idea early on, and so the notion here was that something was right about the idea of space clearing. As Sharon progressed through her life, she studied feng shui, she studied with different shamanic traditions, and she's incorporated those into what she calls energy shifting. And so there's a lot of different techniques that are applied to the particular situation.
Okay. Well, how did you meet Sharon? I mean, it's
unusual
that you're doing the same. You're an energy shifter yourself.
I came through a little bit different. Sharon and I met when we were both working for the great rock and roll impresario Bill Graham in San Francisco. And this is like over 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was designing rock and roll tours. And Sharon was the first woman in the union. She was an electrician in the Stagehands Union. But as she became part of our group of people, we found she was as good a designer as any of us. And we've continued to do that over the years. I came from, my passion was bodywork, and not only the physical idea of massage and physical therapy and cranial sacral work, but working with energy. So the two of us came from energy of bodies, me, energy of spaces, Sharon, and we created a lot of energetic environments in the music business.
Okay.
You mean with art?
That's a little over my head. What do you guys think?
Were you working with artists, the musicians themselves?
Yes. Yeah. We design for basically anybody you can shake a stick at.
What about the physical part? Did they ask you to help them with themselves?
You know, very rarely. I will say that in the body work I did, it was a plus. But not just to name drop, but I mean we worked with Billy Joel, Rolling Stones, David Bowie, ZZ Top, Paul Simon.
Which one of the Stones?
Many, many people. And some of them have more of an esoteric approach to their work than others. But we were about creating the event, the concert, the tour. And so it rarely got to that side of it because nobody really was presenting that.
What did you say you did cranial sacral work?
Cranial sacral work is it's work that works as it sounds, the cranium and the sacrum, the two ends of the spinal cord. It came out of osteopathic work about 120 years ago, and it is a means of moving energy through soft tissue, through the cranium. It's a very subtle form of body work that has a lot of very profound results, but it is definitely an energetic form of work.
So you do Reiki as well?
Yes. We certainly have studied Reiki.
Mm-hmm. That's, okay.
That's another form of energy work. Yeah.
All right. Well, I need some sort of visual, okay? Geomancy, practical magic, where intention goes, energy flows, power of intention. What's the visual for me if I see you working with this practical magic? What would I see you doing?
Okay, good question. I'm going to skip geomancy just for a second. But when we're working in clearing a home, which most people can relate to, the work really comes from sensing what is there. In some cases, it is literally a geological or a geopathic condition, which can result from groundwater. So we do dowsing and that sort of thing, because very often the geological faults that lie below the space upset the balance of energy. They allow kind of geopathic or bad energies to come through. Sometimes they are literally vortexes of energy that occur on a regular basis throughout the planet. These can be upsetting, nauseating, cause imbalances and sicknesses. So we go to the idea of geomancy that you asked about earlier. And geomancy is a very ancient science that goes back to, people know it best when they think of the Druids and the stone circles, or more contemporarily, the crop circles. The notion of working with geometry in the earth to rearrange the energy for a particular area. And that's what the science, the art of geomancy is about. Now, I'll let you go in.
Okay, you said something about crop circles. You're saying that that's, how do you think crop circles are formed?
Well, let's take the idea of the word geomancy, which is, you know, it's basically earth magic. And the notion that there are, to me, magic is really having the discipline and a practice to be able for you to see the patterns in nature and in energy. In that sense that it seems like magic, but in reality, it's just having the perception to observe and correlate the patterns that exist. So I look at crop circles and I believe that there is an order and a beauty to them because of the patterns that exist. How they're manipulated, I can't even speculate. I've thought about it many times. I think most of them are frauds, and I think that a handful of them are, you know, just absolutely stupefyingly amazing. I don't pretend to know how they come about, but I can understand the patterns.
So you don't think it's connected to alien life?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. But I certainly can't assert that that's where they come from. You guys have an experience with that? Because I haven't listened to your show. I don't know.
Well, no, there's a lot of speculation.
We just like
sure.
to ask everyone's opinion yeah. on crop circles.
What are you saying, Robbie? Give me more. What can I say?
They are absolutely amazing, even if they're frauds, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Larry, I'm sorry. Did you say that you could, when you looked at the crop circle, you could, I guess, intuit what it was doing?
Well,
did you say you understood them?
One of the things about geomancy and as Sharon and I are both designers, is there is a real appreciation for the mathematics, for the patterning that exists in them. I mean, you can take them apart and look at the geometry of most of the crop circles, and most of them are very derivative of, you know, Pythagorean theorems, of Euclidean geometry. You can see the golden mean, the phi. A lot of people, because of Da Vinci Code, know the Fibonacci series. If you take a look at the relationship of the patterning in it, you can see a real beauty that exists in the spiral of a floral bloom. It's the same kind of geometry.
Are you saying that you said there's a lot of them that are just fake? You can tell, or you're able to tell when what you believe is kind of the real deal, as opposed to just a kind of a knockoff somebody did.
I haven't seen enough of them close up to really know if I could tell. The thing in the hoaxes that seems to be prevalent is the idea that the stems of the plants are broken or, you know, and bent pretty violently, where the crop circles that defy explanation seem to have grown or moved in that direction without damage to the plant. I mean, I've looked at the same pictures you guys have, probably.
Now, any thoughts on the geometric form of the earth underneath these things? If the ley lines or whatever might have something to do with the formation of these things? Any idea on your behalf?
Yeah, I think that they occur in particular areas that, you know, are given to those ley lines, to the geological underlayment of the land, and in some cases, perhaps, you know, they seem to occur in places that are not unfamiliar with a geomantic tradition.
Mm-hmm. So this is something you are aware of, then?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. We live in a really wonderful, you know, we live outside of Portland, Oregon, and we've been here for a long time. We're, you know, right by a majestic mountain, Mount Hood. There are very discernible ley lines that exist, but it's also a very ancient, the whole Sierras is volcanic in nature. There have been tremendous cataclysmic events over, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And we find that when we are in particular areas, west of Portland, for instance, is really an alluvial area that is has been washed over countless floods, and the soil and the groundwater is totally different than where we live on the east side, which is basaltic and volcanic in nature. Mm-hmm. So right away, you can perceive in dowsing and just, and we rely on ourselves as the best sensors. I mean, really, literally picking it up through your hands, through your body. We see a great difference between the geological aspects of both places.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Have you come across any really bad energies, Larry?
Oh, sure. And the worst energies that we have come across, I mean, there are certainly disquieting ones that have to do with entities and ghosts. People that have been disembodied in a tragic and sudden way, that are unaware that they are dead and are so confused themselves that they constantly try and reach out and try to affect the people around them for an understanding of what's going on. But some of the worst and most noxious energies that we've come across have been caused by shifts, for instance, plate tectonics movements that open up vortexes of energy that come up through a person's home. All of a sudden, the health of the family is affected, or the psychological approach has happened. I wouldn't say that anything frightens me because it's beyond understanding or has tried to assault us physically. But we've seen some pretty interesting, you know, poltergeist kind of things, where doors will close and furniture will move and things will fall off the wall. Those kind of things have happened, and trying to discern what the origin of it is always a wonderful business.
Well, how do you protect yourself when you go into these homes that even might have, do you believe in portals?
Yes, I do believe in portals, and portals are something that, like many physical gates that we all know, can be controlled. Portals are just another form of energy that, if you have a practice, and this is another, going back to your earlier part of the question, which is about protecting oneself, mm-hmm. It's important to have a strong practice that centers yourself. Whether you're doing martial arts or whether you're doing space clearing, the first and primary thing is to understand yourself, to root yourself. If you understand the idea of chakras and the idea of energy system that connects you with the rest of the universe, it's important to strengthen that. And through that, strengthen the etheric field around you. If you are in control and feel strong in that, there's very little in our experience that can adversely affect you.
Okay, so you're not protecting yourself with a visual white light or anything like that?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that in creating a strong central channel, to go to the acupuncture side, but the energy field that permeates through your body, are you guys familiar with Taoist principles of the microcosmic orbit? The idea that you breathe in, breathe out, and you surround yourself with this, you know, egg or sphere of power. You know, this is
Earl
really,
is, but I'm not. I don't know.
Okay. Well, this is a very powerful practice. And then another practice that we have done for many years is the practice called Chud, which comes from Tibetan Buddhism. Actually, it comes from the Bun shamanic tradition that precedes Buddhism. And it's the severing of attachments. It's the notion that you give up your body, all the physical aspects of yourself, to the universe as an offering. You have nothing to fear if, in fact, you're willing to give everything that you have to feed and nourish the universe. And this means good spirits, bad spirits. I mean, if you look at the if you look at the imagery from Tibetan Buddhism, and you've got all these wrathful spirits, and you've got these highly evolved spirits of compassion, and you've got these harukas, these blood-drinking demons, and it encompasses all the human attributes that that we've seen, and it's a practice doing that, and then we and then on ourselves coming into working with clients and coming away from, we do energy cleanups of each other, because we work in a team. I mean, not just my wife and myself, but we have other people that work with us.
Okay, well, who are the other people? What do they do on your team?
Well, one of the people, Lisa. Lisa is a mother of four and a grandmother of three, and Lisa and Sharon approach things from more of a maternal side of it, in a way. And Sharon is definitely the kind of high priestess in that sense, but Lisa and she have a feminine side that really works with the that works with the home, you know, really making a place, a peaceful place of centeredness, of nourishment, of power for the people at home. I work with another fellow named Nicholas Hernandez, who is originally from Michoacán in Mexico, a very interesting area if people are familiar with Carlos Castaneda and others. But he comes out of not only that kind of shamanic tradition, but a deeply imbued Catholic tradition. And Nicholas and I often work on the exterior, on the geomancy side of the equation. So it's typically the four of us. We have other friends that come and go out of our group, and we have other groups that we do energy healing work with and that sort of thing. But when we're talking about space clearing, it's essentially the four of us.
Okay. What is your religion, Larry? Do you practice a religion?
Whatever floats your boat. I think that you have to just be...
Buoyancy?
Pardon?
Buoyancy is a religion?
Buoyancy. Buoyancy, that's good. Floating through the universe, that's good.
It is now.
Yeah, I think anybody who puts an imprint on it and says that they own it is full of it. So the universe is way too vast. So, no, I don't consider myself a religious person. I consider myself a deeply spiritual person.
Okay, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. But Larry, you're using a lot of Eastern concepts, a lot of Buddhist concepts.
Yeah.
Do you use Christian concepts also?
I think that at the root of Christianity, you know, are the same basic principles you find at the root of Buddhism, Hinduism, you know, any of the major empathic, you know, religious schools of thought. To put a brand on it, to me, is smacks of Madison Avenue. Of course there's great teachings by, you know, by Jesus, by Paul, by, you know, Moses Maimonides and the Jewish theologians from the Talmud. I mean, there's great teachings there, but it all goes back to the heart, and it all goes back to the spirit and compassion. And that is really why we're really not about the hoopla of, oh my God, there's a ghost here. Ah, you know, this Blair Witch approach to everybody trying to see if there are entities there. The point is, why are those spirits there? Communicate with them and help them to make a transition if you can.
How can you feel and see these spirits and I can't?
I'll tell you right up front, I don't see spirits at all. I feel them. And it's not a question of whether you can or can't see them. It's a question of taking the time and the space to listen. I don't think that you are any less able to do that than anybody else. I think it's really quieting yourself and listening, and then trusting what comes to you.
Okay, well said. Yeah.
Do you think, Larry, that there's a bit of intention and expectation in there also? if you don't think you can see them or hear them or feel them, you just you won't be able to?
Oh yeah, we're, you know, fear and ignorance are the great mind killers.
Okay, but I have to interrupt there because there are people who have sworn that's all BS, and then all of a sudden they're freaked out because they felt or saw a ghost.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know, Earl, we've talked about that.
I guess it's the difference between a little electric charge in your outlet and being struck by lightning. You know, it's
well, the electricity. I can't wrap my head around this at all because, yeah, you would think, well, an atheist or someone who just is like, oh, that's just all nonsense. And then all of a sudden, boom, they swear they saw a ghost or felt a ghost or saw something happen in their home. That's where I'm got a problem with. Not a problem, sorry. That's when someone says you don't open yourself up to it, that's perhaps why. Do you know what I'm saying, Larry?
Yes, I do, but I think that people's preconceptions that come from whatever upbringing they have, whatever religion they might have, whatever thing, you know, can put.
I don't practice a religion, so you don't have to be freaked out.
No, I'm not freaked. Believe me, what I'm saying is that when it comes to you, you know, it comes to you. It's, you know, if you seek it, there are certain practices that may enhance your ability to do it. But it's not necessarily a guarantee that you can spend your life looking for ghosts and never find one. We're not looking for ghosts when we go out to work. We're really trying to put ourselves in the environment and see what influences are occurring.
Okay. Larry, when we come back, we're going to talk about the properties that you've been on, the realtors, and the ceremonies, and talk about, it's interesting, like Robert said, what do you mean a realtor hired you? I want to hear some of those stories. That would be great.
Certainly.
Okay, we'll be back with Larry Hitchcock, mm-hmm. energy shifter, filling in for his lovely wife, Sharon Sinclair. We'll be back
very
in
lovely.
About four. Very lovely.
There's a point.
In about 4 minutes. Thanks.
You're listening to Tenacity Radio, real entertainment, no excuses.
crazy. Remember how I made you scream? I don't understand what happened to our love. But babe, I'm gonna get you back. I'm gonna show you.
Hitchcock, Energy Shifter. Is that correct? Is that the title you use as well?
Larry? Energy Shifter. Just okay. energy-shifter.com.
That's yep. Right. Let's mention your website again. Sorry. Go right ahead.
No, it's energy-shifter.com. Don't ask me, but some oil company owns energy-shifter.com. I can't figure it. They don't use it, but I couldn't get it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go on to real estate space clearing, let's, Professor, you had a question about geomancy.
Yeah, I did. When we were talking about the geomancy, and Larry, you were talking with plate tectonics and some shifting of the ground that could cause vortexes and issues above ground. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the whole fracking debate. And the potential for us to be causing many earthquakes in northern Ohio. What is that doing to the spirit realm or to, you know, to energy?
That's a really good point, because we've reached the stage where we can really influence the geology on a pretty huge scale. I think fracking.
Okay, let's explain fracking first, because not everybody lives in Pennsylvania and Ohio and knows what's going on here.
What the frack is it?
Let me just say, fracking is a drilling technology that makes it possible to reach natural gas reserves. Okay, so go ahead, Larry.
Right, but it's literally like it sounds. It's done by fracturing the bedrock. It's done by interjecting, you know, high pressure fluids, breaking up the rock, injecting polymers into it to keep the fractures open, and then extending it like bifurcating branches. It's just like branching after branching after branching, and it breaks up the space and allows the natural gas to come in and allows for a place to store it and release it. So what it does is it's taking the substrate, which is the under part of what we live on, and it breaks it up. It changes the energy. We talk about shift the energy, change your life. Fracking allows, I mean, if it's releasing natural gas, just think of things that people, the gas that most people know, which is radon.
Yeah.
You know, and radon is a carcinogenic, you know, gas that can be released. Nobody's talking about what's going on there, and I haven't seen any data on that. Do any of you guys know anything about
it? They're removing 10 times the amount of oil and gas that they do with normal oil drinking.
Right. But, I mean, is that releasing? Let's talk, forget the spiritual.
There's already a lot of radon in Pennsylvania, yeah, so that's pretty scary.
Just I'm referencing the consumables. There's stuff that they just spooge out into little cesspools that they have, you know, located next to the drills and stuff like that. But 10 times is pretty significant if you think about it.
It's extraordinary. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Larry. I haven't seen anything about releasing radon, though I wouldn't be surprised at all that they were covering that up.
Of course.
I know. I mean, everybody's caught up in the idea of, okay, well, let's get lower natural gas prices.
That's the whole thing.
They're taking
we'll
off
die before we see
they cut the mountaintops off in Kentucky and West Virginia to get to coal. I mean, mm-hmm. You're talking about moving energy. I mean, it's extraordinary.
The really bad part is this presidential team. They've okayed a lot of this just for their fact that they're trying to create jobs, and that's like their main intent is creating jobs. I've seen a pump or a drill go up in an amazing amount of time. It turned from being a cornfield into a major complex where it looks like it's a huge factory now in less than 6 weeks.
Yeah, and yet the debate is over the XL pipeline, which at least you can see and is above ground, and that's been blocked, which to me merits a lot of study. But besides getting into the environmental stuff, you wanted to go into the notion of the geopathic or electromagnetic, which is another aspect of it. You guys may have discussed electromagnetic before, but of course there's a naturally occurring grid work of electromagnetic that comes from the Earth's magnetic field. But of course we've superimposed a huge electric grid across the planet, and we've seen what's happened with transformers and living on cancer clusters under high voltage lines, and those are also other effects that are man-made that we encounter all the time. And sometimes it's grounding a place properly, literally, with physical grounding, you know. And in other cases, it's doing more of an esoteric grounding by opening up a vortex in the Earth and allowing the energy a place to drain, a place to go, and not have it just be in the household, in the people. It varies with locations.
I have a question about these ley lines and stuff. I've not only heard other folks talk about them and how they converge on these certain high, where there's a lot of these ley lines or certain special ones that are in certain parts of the world, and people go there to do their metaphysical stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them claim that they're all connected, they're interconnected, and eventually... I don't really know all the specifics. Some people claim the 13 skulls have something to do with it, or that
the
they're all so...
Skulls, yeah.
Go ahead.
The crystal skulls.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
The ley lines are creating an energy conduit of sorts through the planet, and allowing certain points or areas of the world to converge with itself. Mm-hmm. Is this something you're familiar with?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so if we are fracking, we're obviously creating a man-made disturbance in in any kind of movement in the world, in the planet, I mean, when I say world, what kind of feeling do you get about this as far as metaphysical goes?
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, fracking's a fairly recent occurrence, but then there's been mining and drilling. And
sure.
You can think of drilling like earth acupuncture in a way. I mean, you know, you think of the scale of it on the planet. I will say that let's take the communication between, I mean, we all love ocean-going mammals, whales, dolphins. They communicate through sound, and they can communicate over hundreds and hundreds of miles. But in the last 150 years since the advent of steam-powered, you know, boats, much less in explosions and you know, seismic things and radar, the disruption of the communication systems for those mammals and fish has been obliterated. I mean, and we find that, you know, this incredible frequency of beached, you know, animals and whales and stuff that are lost because
there was one just the other day.
Systems have been totally screwed up. So if you extrapolate that kind of idea to the earth energies that go through, right, I think you can see the kind of havoc that can be wreaked.
But Larry, you said something, and I just kind of struck me as really important when you said let's, you know, even if we're not talking about the esoteric energies, but we're talking more about the environment. And, yeah, and really, can we separate those two things? I mean, is our environment, our planet, our plant life, our animal life, how much of our energy is derived from our existence and our entanglement with our environment?
Hmm. Oh, you know, I do firmly believe, and we do, that we are all one. When you talk to the idea of Buddhist practice, which we've talked about a little bit, one of the most appealing things about the Buddhist practice is that it's whatever you're doing is done with the intention and belief that you are doing it for all sentient beings, all beings. You know, you don't do it for yourself alone. This is not to get your little gold stamp ticket to heaven. You know, if you're not doing it for everybody, you're not doing it for anybody. And everything. So, of course, it affects. I do believe that that a butterfly's wing, you know, flapping in the breeze affects everything, you know, in the universe. It has to be. It's just by physics alone, it's true.
Oh, does wow, it frustrate that sounds like you? Something you would say, Professor.
it does.
That was beautiful. Now that was really beautiful.
It is, and I'm finding myself agreeing 100%. But doesn't that frustrate you then, Larry, when you look at the news and you see where the direction of our society is going, what we're doing to the planet? It's it just kills me. I got to tell you.
It is, but it's very difficult, and I get caught up in the politic and the debate far more than Sharon. Sharon just stays on point and does what she does in the opportunity and the environment she's presented with, and that's all that we can really do. You know, mm-hmm. I can't change, you know, the mind of Vladimir Putin or some oil magnate in Saudi Arabia or the guy who's exploiting teenagers on, you know, YouTube or whatever. I can't do that. I mean, it's such a connected world in our lifetime. It's extraordinary, and there's a lot of opportunity for change for good. But at the end of the day, it's the environment around us, the love and compassion that you put into what you do that is going to make the greatest effect. I applaud the people who can do it on a much broader scope. I wish sometimes, you know, that I could be Bill and Melinda Gates and, you know, give $300 billion to help immunize children. I think that's fantastic. But I can't get frustrated because I can't do that. The thing to do is when people call us on the phone and find us on the internet and say, I'm in trouble here, can you help? And we can say, we'll be there and do what we can. There's no panacea. We don't offer guarantees. We don't know what we're going to encounter. But the communication with fellow human beings and animals and plants, because we do run into a lot of nature spirits in this line of work. There's an extraordinary amount of energy that takes place when trees and plants and have been displaced and
oh my god
and rivers dammed up and
have you always been practicing these things?
Wait, I want to hear this. So I'm sorry, Robbie. So tell us about that when the trees are cleared away. And is this true, really, like that the screaming
Absolutely.
Trees?
In the Northwest, one of the reasons Sharon and I love it here is because we're blessed with these extraordinary forests and these giant trees, most of which are second growth because most of them were taken out. But there's these magnificent spirits that live in the tree itself. And we've gone into dozens of homes where there's a disruption, where there's something that's wrong, and we find that the area where it's concentrated, and this is done by just sensing and kind of focusing and seeing where it's most prevalent, is often the place where a huge tree, a mother tree, has been taken out and, you know, just cut down. And
oh my God.
Each of the trees, not only is a tree something that's lived far longer than you and I, it's an ecosystem in and of itself. There are everything from the moss and the fungi to the birds and the squirrels that live in the trees. And all that's wiped out. And there is a huge sadness. There's a shock. And there's a real disruption that occurs when those things happen.
Avatar.
But, you know,
yes. Avatar, you know, I mean, I'm literally crying. That is so sad.
You know, it's amazing, Larry, because I've never, I'm pretty well read, and my whole life, to see a tree or to see an area that's been cut has always deeply saddened me. It's just, to see an acre of ground removed, the trees removed, it just crushes me every time I see it, and it's the same feeling every time, and I would swear to you that I can feel the sadness of those, you know.
You can. That's exactly what we're talking about. You feel that. It's not just an empathy or an aesthetic thing and say, God, this is clear cut. It looks horrible. You feel it.
Yeah, it's deep.
You clearly do.
Right. It's deep down. It's a very deep feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I can hear, when I hear, God, the chainsaws in my neighborhood, I just start freaking out. It's so sad.
So
you know,
how do you?
And I just hope. Well, maybe they're cutting the tree down because it's half dead. But then I know animals, birds still feed off.
Well, how do you respond to the like here? These last couple of seasons here, where I live in Cincinnati, there's been some pretty serious windstorms. That's Mother Nature blowing these trees that I know are a couple of hundred years old down. They've been here forever, and I know people are dealing with this stuff and they can't believe that these trees are falling. How do you account for that?
Well, I mean, nature can take us out too.
Those are the weaker trees, though, aren't they?
They're the biggest ones here.
Who's weak when it comes up to a 100-mile-an-hour gust? I mean, you know, it's like,
well, some of them survive. I'm just saying, that's call that?
Right. I mean,
there are some people.
Robert,
that...
You're right, Robert. I mean, it's you don't know.
What about the conspiracy theorists that blame the man-made weather creations?
You know, I don't know how I feel about that yet. I mean, I believe
the wheat ball.
Katrina is a good example. A lot of people think that was man-made.
Yeah, I don't know that it is. I mean, I think that storms are. So, I mean, like, the hurricanes are so incredibly strong. I think that, I mean, you live on the Mississippi Delta in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it's been, I mean, forever, hurricanes have come through there before man, and it will continue to. I think that Louisiana or New Orleans was ill-prepared to take a storm of that intensity. But I don't know that man-made. I believe that we're contributing to global warming. I do. I mean, our CO2 levels are high, but you know, there's naturally occurring cycles. As much as I would like to blame industry for a lot of ills, but
I think the wheat industry really did cause back in, Robbie, when was that?
That was in the 30s.
The 1930s.
Yeah.
1930s.
The Dust Bowl.
Yeah, they blame man for that whole disaster.
Well, that's been proven. Remember? Yeah, that's been proven that humans, you know, their greed of humans wanting wheat and corn and whatever, wheat, obviously, the greed is what caused that problem. They just was
The Dust Bowl of the early 30s, which coincided with the Depression. I mean, it was a kind of double whammy
Double whammy, exactly.
Yeah. That was bad farming practices. It's true. People didn't understand erosion and irrigation as well. But I mean, look at the drought that's happened in Texas over the last 10 years, or the last few years. I mean, it's turning that place, and there's nothing that it seems that we can do about it.
To a place like that, Larry, and feel the nature spirits? Like,
yes,
what happens? Like, are they suffering? Do you feel that in a drought situation?
Yes.
We were talking about trees, for example.
I do. I mean, here's an example that people don't understand very well, but and this has happened on a number of occasions where people have experienced problems with things like, all of a sudden, they have flooding your groundwater, because we do work with dowsing and looking at that sort of thing. And then I'll find out, and I'll go, and I'll feel this energy. And Sharon and I did this at a place a couple of years ago. We went back into the back of the house, and we said, there was a tree here. There was a huge tree here. They said, yes, there was this, you know, 200-year-old silver maple and blah, blah, blah. And they cut in a new road and did this and cut the roots, and eventually it died. And I said, and all of a sudden you had flooding. Well, that's because a tree of that size can take 2,000, 2,500 gallons of water a day out of the soil in its root system. If there's water flow there, and this tree, which is grown because it is in a wonderful place to grow, is all of a sudden you've got, you know, a swimming pool every 4 days of water that has no place else to go, then it's going to come into your basement. So you have to look at it on a practical sense too. But you could feel the energy of the tree having died because of people building roads and doing stuff that cut the root system. But there was a consequence to that.
Larry, what do you think? I'm sorry. What do you think? You hear when Robbie mentioned the trees, the wind knocked the trees down. So, what's the difference between that and a chainsaw? And I hear that a lot from people who say, "Well, you know, global warming, it's going to happen anyway, or the tree's going to die anyway. So why not cut it down?" And I think there's a huge difference between what happens naturally in the cycle of life, and what happens when a man comes in when people come in and totally destroy the environment.
Women cutting down a tree. Come on.
They can cut down trees, I guess.
I think it's tragic in either case. I think the fact that somebody consciously cuts down a tree and may not give it any regard. I think, like Native American hunters who gave reverence to the animals they killed to feed themselves, and I think you can consciously do that. I'm not a vegetarian. I think there's a lot of good reasons to be a vegetarian, but I personally would like to believe, you know, if you can consciously do that cycle, it's better. Maybe not for the animal, maybe not for the tree. And I don't know if a tree makes a discernment between being blown over by a 100-mile-an-hour gust of wind or a chainsaw. I can't honestly answer that.
All right. Well, we need to say goodbye to Larry, unfortunately. And we didn't get to talk about ceremonies or spirit communication.
Oh,
or
I want
real
to talk
estate.
About those things too. So why don't we get together and Sharon is available and we'll talk about ceremony. We'll talk
I
about
would
what
love
intention
to.
Means, how you can really reinforce your own intentions.
I would love to. I mean, and they were three things I wanted to focus on, and then I also had some other topics in there, and we didn't even get to talk about her book. So let's do that. I'm going to talk to you off air. We'll get together again, and let's mention your website one more time before we say goodbye.
It's energy-shifter, energy-shifter.com.
Okay, great. And
or energyshifter at gmail if you just want to write us.
Robbie will put it up in the chat room again, okay?
Wonderful.
Larry, it was a real pleasure. Thank you so much for sitting in for Sharon.
Thank you.
And I would love to talk to you again. So.
Well, we look forward to it. I know Sharon would like to do that.
All right. Why don't you stay on the line, if you can, for an extra 2 minutes, and I will get off air and we can chat about that, okay?
Sure. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and stay tuned for SF Talk Radio here on Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Tenacity Radio, your source for eclectic talk and music. Can't make it to a show? Check out the archives at tenacityradio.com or listen to them right on your iPhone, BlackBerry, Palm Pre, or Android. Go to tenacityradio.com for all of the details, show schedules, and more. Tenacity Radio, real entertainment, no excuses.
Hi there, this is Simon Godfrey from Tiny Fish.
Hey, I'm Fido Xavier.
This is Leslie Hunt from District 97, and you're listening to Tenacity Radio.
Hello, darling. This is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and you're here on tenacityradio.com. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Every day, ordinary people around the world are having extraordinary experiences. 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 Experiences.
Some of these experiences are profound and life-changing, while others reveal a cold, dark truth that's unfathomable to the human condition. To the human condition. To the human condition.
Join us as we discuss the paranormal, close encounters with the unusual, and interactions with the supernatural.
Join the Enigma Project.
Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on TenacityRadio.com. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Join me, Essie Burns, as I interview all areas of style, from interior design, fashion, arts, beauty, and more. Every Tuesday, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, here on Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.